Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, it's Joe, and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. Have you heard that I plan on actually starting a brand new online conference dedicated 100% to test automation called Automation Guild? I'm in the early phases of planning it now, but the date I'm aiming for is the middle of January 2017. If that sounds like something you're interested in, head on over to automationguild.com and leave your email. I'll be sending out updates to people on the email list every week or so to get their feedback about how the conference should shape up with the different speakers and presenters and topics and get your input. So the earlier you get in, the more you can actually shape the conference. So now on to the show. Today we'll be test talking with Katrina Kloki, also known as Katrina the Tester, about the benefits of cross-team peer testing in Agile. So Katrina shares with us all the benefits her organization has enjoyed since starting peer testing, as well as how it's helping to change the culture through testing within her organization. If your Agile sprint teams are struggling with testing, you won't want to miss this episode. Check it out. Test Talks is sponsored by the fantastic folks at Sauce Labs, the cloud-based automated testing platform that eliminates the need to maintain your own Selenium grid and test infrastructure. Try it for free today. Visit testtalks.com and click on the Sign Up Now link under the homepage sponsor section. Hey, Katrina. Welcome to Test Talks.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. It's great to finally have you on the show. Before we get into it, though, could you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Certainly. So I am a testing coach at the Bank of New Zealand in Wellington in New Zealand. I work with a team of about 30 testers, and it's quite a fun role. It's a mixture of training, automation frameworks, testing practices, and just generally helping people out and making sure they have cake every week. I also am very active in the testing community. I edit Testing Trapeze. I co-founded the WeTest meetups in Wellington. I speak at a lot of conferences. I write a blog, and I'm try to be active on Twitter, although sometimes I need to take breaks.
Awesome. Yeah, that's what I love about you. You're very active. You're always given to the community, and there's a lot of things we could talk about. So we'll probably touch on a bunch of different things, but today I probably want to focus on two main things, and that is some of your most recent posts is peer testing and changing culture through testing transformation. I guess before we get started, how did you get into testing? I'm always curious to know how someone becomes a tester.
So for me, I did a computer science degree at university, and I was a developer. And I transferred into a role that was called a solution delivery engineer. And I was based in New Zealand, but I was doing mobile network installs, configuration and testing of what we called the intelligent network part of mobile systems. So that role, the reason I took that role was that it involved a lot of fun travel. So we were supporting Asia Pacific and Central and Latin America. So I got to do a lot of trips overseas and a lot of really fun technical work. And after a few years in that role, I kind of thought about, from what I had done in my career so far, what did I enjoy the most? And I decided that I would look for a testing role. So for me, it was an active decision that I wanted to move into testing because I really enjoy the problem solving and, you know, identifying the bug is one thing, but working out why it's happening and potentially how to fix it is the part that I really enjoyed.
Very cool. Yeah, I definitely agree. I love the different mindset you get to use when you're a tester as opposed to a developer. Since you do have that developer background, you're probably familiar with peer programming, but one of your recent posts, you talked about peer testing. So for people that maybe don't have a developer background or aren't familiar with that term, what is peer testing at a high level?
So at a high level, peer testing is exactly what it sounds like. It's two people on the same machine trying to complete a testing task together. So the difference for me between two people working together and two people pairing is that pairing, you are both active on the problem at the same time. So it's not like asking someone over to help you do something. It's like saying, okay, I have this task. Will you come and sit with me the whole way through this? We can take turns at being the person driving this activity. I want your ideas. We can kind of do this whole thing together.
Cool. So when you say peer testing, though, is it pairing two testers together? Or it could be pairing just two people together to have them test the system. Does that make sense?
Good point. Yes, absolutely. So at my organization, it has been testers, but it certainly could be two people from any discipline who would like to test an application.
Very cool. Yeah, I heard Lisa Crispin talk about in her team, they're actually pairing up testers with developers, and they're sharing knowledge between one another. So again, the benefit of peer testing, but also again the benefit of cross-pollination almost of different skills. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So the main reason that we've done it in my organization is that same thing. It's about cross-pollination of skills, but it's actually cross-pollination between our testers. So the 30 testers that I work with are spread across 18 different agile teams, and those 18 teams are working with maybe 5 or 6 different products. So even though the testers are all in the same department, a tester in one team has quite a different experience from someone in another team. Like, they're working on different platforms, different approaches, different tools. So for us, pairing two testers together on tasks was actually a way to do that cross-pollination, because people didn't have visibility of what was happening in other teams until they got the opportunity to go and actively work in those teams.
I just want to go into a little bit more how you handle, how you coach 18 sprint teams, because I coach eight of them, and I find it very difficult when they're spread out across the globe. So I guess one of the issues I've seen, and I'm curious to know if you've seen the same thing, is we have 8 sprint teams. They're developing the same application, but they act like their own little world. And they, like you said, they have almost different practices, different tools. And the tester almost becomes, almost isolated from the other testers on the other sprint tracks. So, have you seen that? And what are ways that we can get more of the sprint teams working as one group, which they really are? They're building one product. How do we get that?
So, absolutely. The situation you've just described is exactly what the situation was for us. So when I started with the bank in my role, I talked with each of the testers, and one of the themes that came through really strongly was that testers felt like they were siloed from other testers. So they were working in really engaged delivery teams, cross-functional teams, and those teams are really productive and they're working well, but they get very insular, and it can be difficult to know what's going on. So the pairing, I called it a pairing experiment, and for us that was about trying to create the bonds between teams through a structured knowledge sharing that pairing provides. It's one of many things that we do. So we also try to have guild communities. So bringing the developers together and the BAs together as well as the testers, and try and get some knowledge sharing happening through disciplines. There's also tribe-based meetings. So we have 18 delivery teams, but they're split into 3 tribes. And so you would be part of a group of people who are all working on your product, and we try and bring people together in that forum to exchange ideas. But I think that pairing has been probably the most effective, and it's actually something that other disciplines in my organization have started to pick up, because it's so hands-on and it's so practical about what someone's actually doing, whereas we're finding that with those kind of wider audience meetings or a 1-hour kind of knowledge sharing session, sometimes that's not tangible enough for people to really take away what's actually going on in that team and how do they actually work and what are they actually doing.
Great. So I guess how do you push this initiative? For me, these sprint teams, they're like overwhelmed sometimes. We have this huge definition of done that they have to complete. How do you encourage them to say, look, this is a benefit. You're going to learn something out of it. It's going to make it easier for you in the long run. Do you have any tips for how to encourage people for actually taking advantage of pair programming or pair testing?
So it was a really interesting, I've had a question of this nature every time I've done a talk like this, which is understandable. And in my organization, I think I was lucky in that the testers saw the need and me creating this framework of pairing was in response to something they had brought to me and said, we feel this way, what can we do? So I didn't have to sell the testers on it necessarily. I did have to sell the management on it slightly, but it turned out to be not as difficult as I was imagining, because it's still, work is still happening when this activity is taking place. So one person comes out of their team and into another team, and that team effectively has two testers for an hour. But then the flip side is that that person from that team would then go back with the other tester, and that other team would have two testers for an hour. So there's not really a change in resourcing or an impact to the project. It's just like shuffling a person across and then shuffling the other person across. And so that was my pitch on explaining it to managers, that there's no, you know, these people are still actively working on their projects. We're just moving in a person to essentially help them and learn from them for an hour, and then vice versa. And that wasn't a particularly difficult sell in the end. And we also did regular retrospectives about the activity, and I was collecting feedback from the testers about what they had found valuable within the session they'd been part of and how that had influenced the way that they were working in their teams. And that feedback was really valuable to share wider as well, to keep the momentum going, to say, here are some of the things we are getting from this. It's worth the shuffling we're doing each month.
No, I think that's a great idea of a way to really talk to managers how this is a benefit. So I guess, are there any ground rules you have for pair testing? Do people just say, okay, let's test? Or like you mentioned, you have a framework or that they work an hour on one. At a high level, do you have like any ground rules that you think make for a successful pair testing session?
So when I introduced this to the team, I gave a proposed structure of a session, and it was quite prescriptive and in some ways more prescriptive than I would have liked to be. But it was the first time that we had done any pairing, and I was really keen to emphasize that I wanted both people in the pair to be hands-on during that pairing session. And it wasn't a demo. It wasn't just a talk through. It was about actively working on a task with both people contributing. So I have a graphic on my blog, which was the one pager that I shared with people. And for a 60-minute session, I was proposing 10 minutes to introduce the task, 20 minutes for the person we called the native, so that the tester who was in that team would test for the first 20 minutes and then they would swap. So the native would give the visiting tester their workstation and they would kind of step back from it, and the visitor would be the driver for 20 minutes. And then at the end, we would do a 10-minute debrief. So 10-minute intro, 20-minute native testing, 20-minute visitor testing, 10-minute debrief. And I had put on each of these periods of time some of the questions that I thought might get asked during those time periods. So it's almost a heuristic framework for pairing, I like to think. So, you know, which of these questions are relevant for what you're hearing and how can you drive this? So what I found with the framework was that some people used this religiously and other people ignored it. And then the feedback in the retro sessions, it became apparent who had ignored it because they weren't seeing the benefits. And we were getting feedback like, an hour is too long, or this session felt like a demo. And so bringing people back to this and saying, you know, can you try to do it this way the next time that you do it, was an effective way of kind of getting people in the habit of swapping. And I think that after the first few iterations of this, so we did a monthly iteration. Every month you would get a new partner. And the expectation was you would do an hour where you were the visitor and an hour where you were the native. The framework, once people started to use it, I think was really useful.
Is it mostly everyone's co-located in this, how it would work, or does this work with people that aren't co-located?
So we are very fortunate that all of our teams are co-located. We're in the same building, at least. We've been lucky. I have had some questions as well from people about doing this with remote peers. And I'm imagining that whatever the tools are by which you collaborate remotely now, you could do this with. So I'm imagining like screen sharing, video calling, a text chat window or Flow Doc or Slack, whatever the tools are that you're using, you could have a session with the same structure where you were actively working with someone for an hour and getting some insight into the way that they approach the problem, and they would get some insights from you into how you view what they're doing.
Awesome. As your company has been doing peer testing, are there any benefits that you've seen right away that, or any features or bugs that were caught that you think may not have been caught if you weren't using peer testing? Any stories of like a really success that came out of this?
It's interesting because when you say that, I can't think of any bugs. Like, I haven't been told specifically about bugs. People will say to me, oh, my peer thought of things that I never would have thought to do. And it was really interesting to me to see how they approach this because it was totally different to what I was going to do. We've seen people, a lot of the feedback was about just the visibility. So it gave people more confidence in what they were doing to some degree because it was validated by seeing the same things in other teams. So previously, the testers and in their delivery teams have developed a test approach for, you know, their area, and they didn't really know how closely that matched with what other testers were doing. And this has been an opportunity to validate some of the way that they've chosen to approach testing. I think the biggest success stories have probably been in tooling. So when I say tools, I'm not talking about automation specific, like checks of suites of stuff. I'm talking about things like Chrome extensions or screenshot tools where people use them without thinking and someone new will come along and say, well, what did you just do? How did you do that so fast? What is that thing? And a lot of those sort of tools have cross-pollinated across the teams through this and really helped to make our testing a bit more efficient. I think the benefits have been around getting a broader scope of thinking for people, giving them some confidence that their approach is aligned with the approaches of other teams and exposing them to new ideas about tools.
Great. And I like your point about visibility. This is something we struggle with. We have 8 sprint teams working on the same product, but they have different features. And one sprint team may be working on a feature and have no idea that impacts how much it actually integrates with another feature that another team's working on. And so we have this communication gap almost. And it almost sounds like peer testing, that is definitely one of the benefits. You pull one tester out into another team, they may say, oh, you know what, we're working on this feature, and I didn't realize how much it's actually going to impact your feature if we both merged into, you know, this is going to cause an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have seen that a pairing session starts a wider conversation because someone will go, whoa, I didn't know about this. Or the other thing I've seen is where the tester who visits the team has so many ideas from the perspective of someone who's not very familiar with the product that those actually end up getting fed back to our product owner and our business analyst to think about how the feature is actually designed. Because when you're working with a product day to day all the time, you get really, you're a power user. You get really used to everything it can do and how it does it. And what was interesting about this is it was a skilled set of fresh eyes. So they have all the domain knowledge, but they're unfamiliar with the particular product. And the feedback from a person like that was really valuable as well.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely see the benefits of this. I'm definitely going to encourage it and try a little experiment of my own and see how this works. You did mention tools, and I know some people say it's not about the tools, but I love tools. So are there any specific tools that you've seen that you think would really help benefit testers doing peer testing? Or do you have a blog post on a list of tools you think would be helpful to someone that's just starting off with peer testing?
When I talked about tools, it was more about the tools that people use in their testing day to day that they assume everyone else knows about. And the tool knowledge we've seen pollinate has been in those kind of quirky, cool little things that people find and don't think to tell anyone about. And it's only when you're watching someone test and you see how they use these things that you go, whoa, that looks really useful. What is that? And it gets shared a bit wider. So tools for testing, for peer testing, like to aid the actual pairing, we don't have anything. I guess the only thing I can think of is a stopwatch. The only thing we found was where sometimes it was difficult to get the native tester away from their keyboard and to get the visitor to actually step into that role and to take ownership and control of what was happening in the activity. And maybe a really visible, like a stopwatch app on your phone or something next to the screen, I can imagine might be useful. But there's not really any applications or software that are specifically for pairing. Yeah.
Gotcha. So it's almost like So I do a lot of test automation. Teams do a lot of automation. So it'd be almost like they may watch another tester use a certain method and not realize that that method was available. So it's actually they're learning from one another. Oh, wow, I didn't know you could do it that way or use this to do that. So it's more like not necessarily tools, but maybe approaches or ways that another tester may do something more efficiently that they didn't know about.
Yeah, absolutely. So some of these sessions have been automation based. We have a lot of UI automation in each of the different products that we support. So some of those sessions have been about sharing coding practices from one test suite across to the test suite of another product. And there's certainly been a little bit of exchange like that where we've seen utility classes and helper classes, some of those methods cross-pollinate, and we've seen general approaches to what are we automating here and why. Some of that started to get a little bit more consistent as people see the decisions being made in other teams. So it's not really about the tool. It's more about how people approaching automation, how they implement code and the decisions they make about what to include in a suite or not.
So we talked about how I work for 8 sprint teams spread across the globe. And you had another post talking about changing culture through testing transformation that they kind of touched on this. Could you just talk a little bit what this post is about at a high level?
This was from a talk that I went to in Australia. So I was at Australian Testing Days and Michelle Cross gave a talk about changing culture. Hers was called Transformation of a QA Department. And she was speaking about the challenges in her environment of working with an offshore testing team that were located in the Philippines and she was part of an organisation in Australia, and some of the cultural differences between those two nationalities, essentially. And what was really interesting to me was, as she was talking, I started to think about the cultural differences between software development teams who are running a waterfall approach and software development teams who run in an agile approach, and some of the parallels to the cultural measures that she was thinking about. So she talked about power distance and individualism, which are measures of how important it is to have kind of a hierarchy and a leadership structure, how important it is for people to have ownership of their own work versus being part of a bigger thing. And she talked about trust and how trust is formed between different cultures, and how for some people it's about respecting cognitive skills. So if you're a very intelligent person, then I trust you, versus effective trust, like people who are warm and open and create kind of a relationship with you, then you will trust them regardless of whether they have, you know, intellectual skill that you respect. And as she was talking about all these things, I was thinking about an agile team versus a waterfall team. So in an agile team, for me, there's a lot of collective people are happy to be part of a we rather than to take ownership of things for themselves. People are happy to be autonomous rather than having a clear hierarchical leadership structure. And I think people build, maybe their trust is a little bit less split, but they build a really strong trust within that group, within that team. And then if I were to compare it to some of the waterfall teams that I've worked in, I found people in those teams, they like to have a really clear ownership of what their role is, and they kind of ring fence their tasks, and things go through a process, and the piece of it that's yours, you take. The people in those teams really like having a management structure, is my observation. So testers who like to have a test manager who's the person who they report to and has some, I guess, mana in the organization, some power there, and they respect them, and there's that strong bond. And the structures of both are different, and the people who gravitate towards each are quite different. And so this is what I'm thinking as Michelle's talking. And then I started to think about transformation. So something that's very strong in the New Zealand market, and particularly in Wellington where I work, because there are a lot of government departments, it's the capital of New Zealand, is transformation. So taking big teams of people who are used to working in a very waterfall way and trying to flip that organization towards running cross-functional agile teams instead. And I started to think about that from a cultural perspective. And if I was to say to a Filipino person who has similar traits perhaps to the waterfall teams, where they really trust leadership and they like to have ownership of their own thing, and if you said to that person, essentially, you should become more Australian, that's quite an abhorrent thing to say to someone. And yet that's kind of what we say to people when we say, you need to stop the way you're doing this and now do it this other way. And I hadn't really thought about transformation in that way before. Like, it was a really, I had always thought, oh, you know, just stop doing it that way and do it this way. Like, how hard can that be? You know, somewhat flippantly. But when I started thinking about it as a cultural shift, I think it gives me more empathy for what those people might be going through. When you say now is the time to transform the way you work, that's not just a challenge to their role, it's a challenge to their identity and the way that they enjoy interacting with people as well, I think.
Awesome. That's a great point about empathy. I'm kind of guilty of this myself. I'm just thinking of a conversation I had where I just shut the guy down and said, oh, that's the old way of thinking. We don't do it that way anymore. And I just moved on. Probably wasn't the most helpful way to really encourage him to move towards agile. Just like, no, old thinking, that's stupid. No, let's go on. But I definitely agree. Also, what I thought was interesting is my company, I took a course with my company, and they had something where you compare your managing style, your style, to how it would relate to other countries. So I have a lot of teams in India, and my style, what I found out, is completely different than what they respect and what works, what their culturally norms are within India. And I was having issues getting, you know, I was wondering why is my communication off? So I guess it's the same way, like you said, you work with 18 sprint teams. It may even be just maybe how you approach a certain team, because to me, our 8 sprint teams are definitely different, even though it's the same product. And I may have to approach one team different than another team. So just being aware that not only cultural differences, but there's also almost sprint team differences. Have you seen that? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I think from the perspective of the fundamentals of what people value, I find that that's relatively consistent. So if people are happy working in our agile teams, generally they're happy about having collective ownership of a problem rather than their own piece of it. And they're generally happy to not have to report to a leader or a manager to just make decisions within the team. But I think at a higher level than that, there are definite cultural differences in the way that our teams operate, because they're made up of different people, and different people will collaborate together in different ways. And New Zealand is kind of interesting in that we have a really high proportion of immigrants, and our teams are very cross-cultural anyway. So I am a native Kiwi, and I am almost in a minority in my organization. We have a lot of people from all over the world, the US, the UK, India, South America, Australia, Asia, every place you could imagine. And so the cultures that develop in each of the teams as a result of those different inputs can be really, really varied depending on who's there. So, I mean, I definitely find engaging with different teams and even engaging with different testers in those teams, you have to adjust your approach based on who you're talking to.
So, Katrina, one thing I forgot to mention was the coding dojos you mentioned in your article about your peer programming experience. Could you just tell us a little bit more about that?
So the testers had got used to pairing with each other. And then we got to what is the New Zealand downtime period. So December, January, February is our summer. And a lot of people go away on vacation during that period of time. And I decided to run dojos. So as you would with programmers. And we ran it on our test with our test automation to try and get some refactoring work done in a way that everyone would understand what we were refactoring and why. And I think that was a lot less challenging for people than perhaps it could have been, because we had done so much pairing that they were used to the switching keyboards and staying engaged in a problem and trying to collaboratively solve something together.
Okay, Katrina, before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to improve their testing efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
I think the biggest difference I see between testers and the results that they achieve is based on how many conversations they have with the people around them. So even if you're the most awesomest tester ever, if you're not talking to your developers and your product owners and your business analysts about what they're doing and why. Your testing is less effective because you haven't taken input about what other people have already tested, why the thing was designed the way it was, how the customers are expecting this thing to behave, what information from testing will be valuable. And without having those conversations, you increase the risk that you will end up delivering stuff from testing that people find irrelevant. So I think the biggest piece of actual advice that I would give to a tester is go talk to people, and do it more than you think you should have to, and go and actively seek out what other people are doing and why, and how to contact me. So I am on Twitter at Katrina Tester. I don't think I have my email on my blog, which is somewhat intentional because I get a lot of spam. So if you want to contact me, you can contact me on Twitter, and then I will message you with my email if we want to have a conversation.
Thank you, Katrina, for your pair testing automation awesomeness. For links to everything of value that we covered in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/111. And while you're there, make sure to click on the Sign Up Now free button under the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Lab's awesome products and services. And if this episode has helped you in any way, why not share it with a friend or coworker by pointing them over to testtalks.com and send them the free Test Talks app links for either iOS or Android devices. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.